The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. Today's discussion is going to be fairly wide-ranging around basically the lay of the land, and two experts to help me along this path, Brian Friel of Nation Analytics and Larry Allen of Allen Federal. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Mark, great to be here. Thanks.
Same here, Mark. Thanks a lot for having us.
You bet. Brian, start off, because you are a novice on my show, so tell people who you are, what you do, and where Nation Analytics fits in the scheme of things for contractors.
Yeah, so Nation Analytics is a company I founded last year after spending about 5 years at Bloomberg Government, where at Bloomberg I did a lot of analysis around federal contracting tied to the tools available to Bloomberg subscribers. But I didn't do any custom work with companies while I was at Bloomberg, but I saw an opportunity to start a company that focused on data-driven market analysis, pipeline development, opportunity assessment, teaming analysis, anything that is data-driven that can help federal contractors make better business decisions is what Nation Analytics does.
Okay, so basically you can take a product service area, analyze it, tell people what bucks are there, what contracts are used, who the players are, and who they might want to partner with if they're in a partnering kind of mood.
Exactly. And it, like, for example, on Alliant 2 last year, which was a scorecard approach, we scored every company that has any experience in the federal government, racked and stacked them, and helped companies figure out where they might rank in the competition, and helped them figure out how to improve their scores.
And let them know if there was no chance in hell.
Yeah, that's right. For some companies, it was, you know, wait till next time.
Yeah. Here's the areas you need to improve in. It's not going to happen in 6 month time frame.
That's right.
So, Larry, same thing, please. They don't know you.
Mark, Allen Federal Business Partners has been around now for a little over 6 years, and we work as strategic advisors to government contractors, doing a lot of B2B and B2G introductions, a little bit of market analysis, not nearly to the granular degree that Brian's company does, but trying to shape up the market and identify people who have money that clients might want to talk to. We do a lot of education for clients, and we do a lot of compliance so that our clients get to keep more of the money they make when selling to the government, and they don't have to write checks back to the government because they failed to pay attention.
Okay. You know, and that's an area that we'll get into shortly, but I really want to take a deep dive into the lay of the land as it happens now. We're like 2 months plus into the new administration, and we have this reorganize the entire beast, and you have 180 days to do it. We have various forms of management by fiat coming out of the White House that I think Congress is joking on. Brian, start us off here. What are you seeing? What's different here?
I think a big difference, and you see that in the skinny budget blueprint that the administration put out last week, in the first section, which this was a 2-page overview of their management agenda. It really talked about a deregulatory approach and trying to devolve power back down away from the central powers like OMB down to the agencies. And so I think, like, you think of the category management circular that President Obama put out toward the end of his administration that had a very compliance heavy approach to contract and acquisition strategy. I think we're going to see that go away, and more of an emphasis on the agencies making their own decisions rather than having the White House try and get, or OMB try and get directly involved in their decisions.
Okay. Larry?
My take on it is I think that Brian's right. I think agencies are going to make their own decisions simply because there aren't enough people resident today in central organizations like OMB who can work at that type of level inside an agency or to coordinate with an agency on the types of reviews and recommendations that they're now charged with conducting. I'm going to take it one step in a potentially different direction, Mark, and say, interesting to me that we are conducting this review now that is largely going to be led by careerists, because we don't have a lot of appointees, particularly anything below the cabinet level, in the great majority of federal agencies. So we've been charged, the agencies have been charged with doing a review. Well, kind of ironically, the people who maybe tended the swamp, to use campaign rhetoric, are the ones now who are charged with doing the review of the agency and coming up with savings. So to me, that's kind of a different approach. It would seem that you would want to have your people, at least some layer of your people inside an agency, so that there's some direction and intentional viewing, intentional strategy of where you want this to end up, that tone can best be set by your own people if they're there. Well, they're not there. So it'll be interesting to see what types of recommendations are going to be made and the extent to which agencies have the commitment or inclination to reform themselves.
Okay. Well, you said something very interesting there to me, in that a lot of these appointments haven't been made. I've read a couple of different places that there's not even people in the queue for that. So it's almost as if the Trump campaign people were not prepared to win because they didn't have a plum book or raisin book, depending on your point of view, ready for this.
Well, they certainly did not. And you know, we talked a little bit before about, in a traditional presidential campaign, you have people who are organizing for you in states and districts and key voting districts. A lot of people on the ground who, after you're elected, are people that you can call on to come in and populate your administration. This administration didn't have so many of those people on the campaign trail. It was
They don't have the same party people to pay off, too. Right.
So. Right. So they had a very centralized campaign organization, so that it's a little bit more difficult to identify those people who would come in, and it's going to take longer. There are names that are apparently on chalkboards and whiteboards at various federal agencies that could come in to fill a lot of these roles, many of which actually don't require Senate confirmation. But you're right. There hasn't been a lot of proactive work to actually get those people on board.
Yeah, and I see that elder daughter has taken a spot at the elder or younger, I forget. One of the daughters taken a spot at the White House. I'm wondering if ex-wives are next.
Well, and Mark, I think we'll probably see the administration get more focused on acquisition policy in 2018. I think they've got bigger fish to fry this year with health care and tax reform and building a wall and all of those campaign promises that the president is trying to follow up on. But we know he's interested in this area because the president spent some time during the transition getting very deeply involved in the Joint Strike Fighter program costs and the Air Force One program costs. So I think we're in a lull here, like sort of an eye before the storm. And I do think that we'll see pretty significant focus by the White House on management issues like acquisition next year.
Makes me hesitant to say anything about programs I like that involve money, because it is on air and who knows who's listening. We have a couple of minutes here in the first segment, so I want to get started on possibly three areas of opportunity for contractors. This show is for the contractor audience, so Brian, lead us off here. What do you see as the, you know, either technologically or the agencies or just opportunity areas in general?
Well, one area that I think we'll see more money in relatively immediately is in the readiness accounts on the military side. That's where the administration has talked about putting money initially. So down the line, we'll see probably more money into weapon systems. But for now, I think there's probably bipartisan agreement that the readiness accounts need more attention. And so that probably means more opportunity for companies that do training and just mission readiness type services at the Defense Department. A second area is the FBI. The Justice Department overall is slated to get a cut, but the FBI is supposed to get an increase. And then there's a sort of double-edged sword at the Homeland Security Department, where you have anything that's tied to border security, and not just the wall, but really anything that's designed to help vet potential entrance into the country, things like passenger security at TSA are slated to see some reductions. The Coast Guard right now, right, is in the crosshairs of the administration. So there are areas at Homeland that will probably get hit, so that money can be diverted to the priorities of the administration on border security.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You'll get Larry's take on this when we come back. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Larry Allen of Allen Federal and Brian Friel of Nation Analytics. Brian, give us your website, please.
It's nationanalytics.com.
That's easy. And Allen Federal, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com?
That's correct.
All right. So, Larry, react to Brian's thoughts and or bring up your own. So, opportunity areas.
Well, certainly right now, to echo what Brian had said in the last segment, Mark, readiness in the military is a first urgent priority. We had just last week a hearing before a subcommittee of the Senate Armed Services Committee where a number of DOD leaders, particularly from the Army and Air Force, came up and laid out a pretty dire picture about what can happen, what will happen, unless Congress appropriates dollars in the time frame that they are currently expected to appropriate them in. So that's an urging to Congress to actually follow through on that, because that's a pretty significant issue. Outside of classic DOD spending, you could move into areas like information technology. Cybersecurity continues to be the first and second and perhaps third priorities. We saw some of that in the president's budget. DHS slated to get $1.5 billion in cyber-related funding for FY18. That could be a nice bump up for them. There's a lot of things that could happen with $1.5 billion. Other agencies like transportation were slated to get increased dollars for cyber as well, indicating that cybersecurity continues to be one of those areas that cuts across all government agencies, Mark, regardless of mission. And in a time of tight IT budgets overall, that's kind of where a lot of the acquisition action continues to be. If you look outside of cyber, and Brian touched on this a little bit, anything that's immigration related, and it doesn't just have to be wall construction. It could be things that support systems to, automated systems to check the border, to track people who are coming in, potentially track what they're doing while they're here and making sure that they leave when they're supposed to. So again, an IT component, but also a support component to house, feed, clothe, prepare all of the extra border guards that the administration would like to put in place along our southern border. So those are all opportunity areas. One other that I would mention for commercial item and service companies, Health IT opportunities at the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is an area that continues to have broad bipartisan support. VA has its appropriations. It will likely start or come pretty close to starting the next fiscal year with appropriated dollars, just because this is an important area. And those dollars are going to be closely tied to improving the delivery of benefits and services to veterans. So any companies that have either IT or logistics or personnel management systems that can help meet those missions, they'll have some opportunities for business there.
Okay. Areas to avoid, just briefly, I mean, you know, obviously environmental issues don't seem to have a high priority here.
I would say EPA certainly is one of those areas that there'll probably be happier hunting grounds other places in the federal market over the next couple of years than EPA. And whether or not we get the degree of reduction that's called for in the president's budget, I believe it's about 31%. We certainly aren't going to see EPA coming into favor, and it will be reduced to some degree. So that's one area. I think things like education, we're going to have to watch a little bit, what they're going to do with that, as well as things that just really aren't on this administration's priority lists. Parts of the Department of Interior, for example, even though we have a very strong secretary who's an environmentalist, or I think you can make the case that he is in place there, whether or not that leadership is enough to convince people on the Hill and OMB that investments need to be made in that portfolio is another matter.
Yeah, I would highlight the sections of the Health and Human Services Department that implement the Affordable Care Act. So the and in general, the HHS is an area that if you're not already there, I would say you probably don't want to target that as an agency you're going to try and get into. There's still plenty of spending at HHS. Medicare will continue,
right,
and there's a lot of contract work around that program. The administration has targeted the opioid epidemic as an area to spend money on at HHS. But because you're going to see fewer dollars and reduced activity around the Affordable Care Act, the companies that are already doing that kind of work at HHS are going to be crowding into the leftover places at HHS. So I think that Larry's right that the VA is a place of opportunity for health IT in a way that HHS isn't. I also think any nice-to-haves on the civilian side, like training, travel, are going to be hit. The agencies will hoard their money out of concern that they need to make sure that they have enough to cover any potential across-the-board increases that might hit them later this year. I think you're actually in good shape if you're an incumbent in the civilian agencies, because there's going to be a sort of duck and hold mentality at those agencies, but not opportunities to get in if you're not already there.
Yeah, and will they extend contracts? Will they reaward contracts? Or one of my favorite topics, what kinds of contracts are they going to use, i.e., are they going to go after more IDIQs and GWACs?
Well, that is kind of an open question. I'd be interested in Mr. Friel's analysis on that as well. From my perspective, Mark, I think the type of contracts are an open question. There's been some discussion about continuing on the category management initiative that was begun at the previous OMB. And that would suggest that there may be some favored, perhaps even an attempt at mandatory contracts that agencies would access for a variety of solutions. We saw that starting to happen at the end of last year for commodity IT, things like laptops, desktops. My understanding is that that may well be revived. It may not be called category management, but the whole idea is to get a better handle on how agency dollars are spent. And one way to do that is to better identify and to potentially limit the number of acquisition travel lanes through which buys can go. So that's something that I'm going to be watching very closely. It's something that I think that contractors, many of whom made significant financial decisions to get on a number of contract vehicles, need to pay attention to. So weigh in with their views on it, particularly if you're a smaller business. There's a lot of concern about where this could go in the small business community. Fewer opportunities, fewer contracts, less visibility for small firms. So the storyline goes. So I think there's the potential for that. We don't know yet. I don't see this administration coming in and wholesale canceling a lot of contracts. Some people have talked about that. I think what's more likely is that multi-year, longer-term contracts, and Brian's going to know more about this than I am, will be pushed out to the right and extended out so that there's the costs and prices associated with them will be amortized over a longer period of time, which can be frustrating to contractors, but it's better than having somebody come in and just drop the hammer on you and tell you you're done.
And we can't forget the effect of the current hiring freeze on the acquisition workforce. And so there's going to be a backlog of contract actions sitting on the desks of the remaining contracting officers in the federal government, and that's going to delay things. So I think we will see lots of extensions of existing contracts. I also think we'll see fewer new contract vehicles created, particularly over the next year or so. And that will mean that work that could have gone onto the new contract vehicles will go to existing programs like Schedule 70. Schedule 70 I see as the fallback when an agency Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services has a contract vehicle that's been trapped in a protest limbo for a while. And so CMS has been putting work out through Schedule 70 in the meantime. I think we'll see agencies turn to GSA's Alliant as well in the breach, and then maybe decide not to create new contract vehicles simply because of the time and expense necessary to create them. So for companies in the IT services and professional services space, I think they really need to, if they don't already have a strategy for being involved with Alliant and CIOSP3 and Oasis and the other big existing contract vehicles, then they need to look at ways to get involved with them.
Yeah, and frankly, from my perspective, if you're on a product buying spree, SOUP and CIOCS are infinitely preferable to 70.
A lot of the analysis that I've done lately, I did some just recently for a couple of clients, I was really surprised to see how much business is going through SOUP and just what a preferred vehicle that is for a number of agencies, Mark.
And Brian, do you have a feel there?
Oh, totally, Larry's totally right. For one thing, the fee is lower on SOUP, so you can buy the same thing on SOUP and pay a lower fee than you would if you put that put that order through Schedule 70. And the SOUP ordering system is so easy. And I think one thing we will see, and this would be something that would be encouraged by the administration, is kind of an entrepreneurial focus at the agencies that run these kinds of contract vehicles. And I think we might see GSA really try and step up its game, because they have lost a lot of market share to SOUP, and SOUP has really done a good job of being very customer focused, listening to the agencies and giving them what they want, which is lots of product availability and ease of ordering and low fee.
And that's frankly the same reason that the NITAC vehicles have moved up over the last few years as well. The focus on customer service, the very low fees, and with NITAC, you have the EGOS ordering system, which helps you on your FITARA report card. And Joanne over at ASUP is rolling out her own version of that sometime this year. Do you know about that, Larry?
I've heard they're in development of that, Mark, but I don't have a firm timeline for when it will be put into effect. I assume that she'd like to get it done before the fourth quarter.
I before the fourth quarter, but I also know, and you know better than me, that she's not going to roll it out until it's perfect.
That's true, too, which is a very good thing about soup. So whether or not it rolls out on what people would consider to be on time, when it rolls out, it will work very well.
And that'll be on Joanne's time. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Brian Friel of Nation Analytics, nationanalytics.com, and Larry Allen of Allen Federal, allenfederal.com, and we shall return after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here today with Larry Allen of Allen Federal, Brian Friel of Nation Analytics, and we are getting ready to dive into a wart subject. CA being fined by the Justice Department for violation of some nebulous crap. That's a technical phrase.
It's right there in the FAR.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it's stupid. So, Larry, what is this?
Well, what happened, Mark, is CA is the latest GSA scheduled company to run afoul of the Federal False Claims Act. And as you alluded to, they recently paid a $45 million fine for their failure to keep track of all of their commercial sales and discounting practices as were required by the terms of their schedule contract. So without getting too technical about it, CA had two requirements. One was to ensure that its schedule price maintained a relationship with the commercial sales and discounting practices through the life of the contract. DOJ claimed that that didn't happen. The second thing that CA was charged with doing was making sure that the data that they supplied to the GSA contracting officer was accurate, current, and complete. DOJ alleged that it was not. There was a lot of back and forth. Look, this is nothing new, Mark, and it is a little aggravating, which is exactly where your remarks at the top of this segment were coming from. We have a system in place right now that does not reflect reality in the commercial market or even segments of the government market, where you have substantial price fluidity, substantial discounting pressure, and you're caught, if you're a schedule contractor, in kind of an antiquated system that was set up and envisioned in a time when companies did not change their discounts all that frequently. They might have a sale every quarter, but that might have been about it. But now we work in the 21st century, and the schedule constructs that they're working under are, you know, some 40 years old, really.
I thought they were a little older. I thought Henry Ford did it one color, one price.
Right. Well, right. Their most basic part, you know, while there have been reforms, the reforms have been maybe around the edges and not really at the heart of it. So the heart of the program really was put together in a time where we don't have the commercial market dynamics that we have today. I would argue that when you have a steady drumbeat of companies who fall victim to not following the rules, it's not that you have a line of contractors who wake up every morning saying, I'm going to break the rules. You rather have a system that's out of touch with what's happening in the rest of the world, and you maybe want to take a look at reforming that system. The other thing I'll say about this before we potentially take another path on this discussion is, like so many of the other recent settlements, Mark, this was a whistleblower case. In this case, it was a former employee of CA who made the allegations of noncompliance. She initiated the suit. Department of Justice joined the suit and took over. Of the $45 million fine, the whistleblower walks away with just north of $10.1 million, which is probably considerably more than she had in her 401k. And as long as we continue to have those types of incentives out there, we're going to have a number of these suits that are bought because There's a financial incentive if you win, and also there it's not going to be too terribly difficult to prove problems because the system is set up maybe in a Henry Ford environment, but we're in the Tesla world.
Yeah. Brian, thoughts?
Well, I think there is an opportunity here for industry to engage this administration and this Congress on the question of how to make the government's commercial buying practices actually reflect the commercial market. I know there is a lot of interest on the Hill and the Armed Services Committees at looking at that issue as part of this year's Defense Authorization Act. And just philosophically, you can see that this administration would be open to those kinds of arguments, especially given their focus on reducing compliance requirements and focusing on outcomes and results.
Okay. So I guess my follow-up question to this particular topic is obvious. The last company to be slapped with this had been slapped for a third time. That was Oracle. They paid considerably more. They vacated the premises. They have no resellers carrying products on GSA schedule. They no longer carry their own, and that's a $300 million hit to 70. But it wasn't a blip for Oracle because they are on every other IDIQ imaginable. So will CA, should CA follow suit?
I think that that's probably something that CA executives are discussing right at this very moment, Mark. And
they're probably listening.
And in a world in the federal market where you have ready-made alternatives to the schedule, and we've named a couple of them here, it's easier to cancel your GSA presence if it's too onerous because there's so many alternative vehicles that serve this segment and that customers like at least as well, if not better. We talked about Soup. Certainly, that's one of them. You talked about the NIH contracts. They're another alternative. But you know, there are specific contracts inside the Army, Navy, and Air Force that serve those constituencies. And we don't have these types of problems. Now, admittedly, one of the reasons why some of those other vehicles don't have the problems that GSA has is because those agencies may piggyback off of a certain amount of the work that GSA has done to put the scheduled contract in place. However, if GSA intends to continue to be the dominant player in commercial item acquisition, it's going to have to keep its systems up to date and reflect reality. TDR, the Transactional Data Reporting Rule, is supposed to be part of the future, Mark, but I think there's some real question as to whether or not we're actually going to see it be the magic bullet that many in GSA hoped it would be.
Or a self-inflicted wound.
Right. Well, TDR at its core would do away with almost virtually contractor-supplied commercial sales information and establish price reasonableness through other means. That would reduce the amount of data that you're providing on your pricing and reduce the amount of information that would be subject to a whistleblower audit or that you could get wrong as a company at its most base form. However, the early indications, frankly, aren't positive that GSA will fully implement that pilot program and go step away from commercial sales practice sheets, even though GSA rank and file people might want to do that. The auditors in the IG's office have indicated that they still intend to audit commercial sales information, even though the company might not be submitting any. And you do have some contracting officers who insist that there is no other way to determine price reasonableness other than having contractors collect and submit a lot of information. So we're at a pretty cloudy time right now. GSA may say, and I think rightly, that they intend TDR to be the better system to keep track with the 21st century, but not everybody's gotten on board that train. Some people are still comfortably in 1999.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. When we return, we are going to talk about TDR in a little more detail, category management, FSSI, LPTA, and all manner of acronym soup. You're listening to AmTower Off Center, FederalNewsRadio.com, 1500 AM, back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with Brian Friel of Nation Analytics and Larry Allen of Allen Federal. It's time for the acronym soup, or does CM count as category management or what?
No, that's a good acronym.
There you go. Okay. So, Brian, let's start off with category management. Right, wrong, going forward, dead in the water?
I think falling apart at a government-wide level. And the couple reasons. One, you have an administration who's not really keen on centralized compliance efforts, which is what any government-wide category management effort would necessarily be. Two, you have agencies that that get their own money appropriated from Congress, and they want to spend that money the way they want to spend it. So I think government-wide category management kind of falls apart here. But I do think that the principles of category management / strategic sourcing, of really analyzing an agency's spend and then figuring out how to do it better, that whole philosophy, I think, has taken hold in the agencies. And we see them doing it at the agency level. So, and I'll give you an example. GSA and OPM created a central contract for training called Human Capital and Training Solutions. And then a couple weeks ago, the Housing and Urban Development Department announced that it was creating its own central training contract, because it had done a category management style analysis, had determined that it was buying training from lots of different contract programs, and decided to consolidate it and create its own vehicle. Now, it certainly could have made the decision to go out and use HCATS, which was just created,
right,
but instead it decided to create its own. And I think that is just the way agencies work. They like to do their own thing with their own money. And so to the extent that the category management survives, it'll be at the agency department level.
I certainly hope that Brian's analysis is correct. I've heard both sides of this with new people coming into OMB when and if that does happen. One would be that category management as we knew it as a government-wide exercise is dead and left with the exit of the previous administration, which would suggest a more agency-centered program for category management. Again, not that centralized government-wide, but you use some of those tenets to analyze spend under management and to make sure that you understand better where your money's going. And arguably, I think a case can be made that that's easier to do at an agency level. But I've also heard that because this administration doesn't trust people and wants to have a better idea of where money is being spent across government, that they may see some sort of CM resurrected. That certainly is going to have support inside OMB, even from careerists. You know, those are the central people who the budget examiners inside OMB think that they've got the answers, and they're looking hard at this, and that they might be able to better centrally manage some of the spend from OMB than if each agency were left to its own devices. I think if you follow the logic of what I've been told, Mark, it depends on who goes into the deputy director of management job at OMB. That person hasn't been named yet. So whoever that becomes will tell us immediately what the future of category management is. I think that, you know, there are good things and bad things, good ways and bad ways to come at this. I mean, certainly as a taxpayer, a citizen, you want your government to be efficient and smart about how it spends your money. And at its core, that's really what a category management exercise is about. But when you start getting into things that say we're going to have a centralized five-year plan, that sounds a little Far Eastern, perhaps. And
or pre-World War II Russian.
Pre-World War II, you know, I was trying to get. And frankly, history isn't on the side of those approaches, even though they can get a lot of people around the Beltway whipped up and supportive and energized. Brian properly pointed out that agencies have a tendency to want to do their own things anyway, and absent a series of mandates and with enforcement mechanisms, that will continue to happen.
Okay.
I would like to see, OMB tell Mad Dog at the Pentagon how to spend his money. I think there was a phrase in the budget blueprint, let managers manage. And if the administration holds to that, and I think they probably will, you'll see the power really at the department level.
Okay. I want to touch on FSSI, talk about your five-year plans that seem to have the wheels falling off. I was at my favorite LPTA gas station the other day and ran across a friend of mine who had is the operative word, a Schedule 75.
Well, Schedule 75 is the poster child now for the Strategic Sourcing Initiative. It's the only program through which any type of significant dollars are flowing at GSA, and it's there are significant storm clouds on the horizon, I think, for the success of this program, Mark. It's all about price. Let's make sure that we understand that if you're in a commercial company in the commercial market and you're looking at strategic sourcing, one aspect, but only one aspect of your strategic sourcing exercise is looking at lowering your price. It's not called the Lower Price Initiative. It's called strategic sourcing for a reason, because there are other things that hang off of that, like setting up good relationships with vendors and making sure your own internal house is efficient. In GSA land, however, strategic sourcing is all about squeezing blood out of turnip, and they are continuing on with reopening their Schedule 75 to make it what I would call maybe something like OS4. We have the current OS3 Federal Strategic Sourcing contract that has mandates and market baskets. It's not doing terribly well. It's losing sales to Schedule 75. GSA's response is to then make the new Schedule 75 look like the program that's losing money that people don't like to work with. And you have the discussion with people at GSA, even senior level people at GSA, who are, you tell them, if this contract isn't a good deal for companies, companies will walk away. And are you going to end up with companies on Schedule 75? Yeah. They're going to be virtual companies that don't have any walls or any real office locations, so good luck with your enforcement if things go wrong. They're not going to be identified brand players that people know who they are, and I think you're going to have to start having some real questions about where the items are coming from that they're offering through this contract. And ultimately, agencies are going to go do just what Brian said they were going to do earlier, yeah, their own thing.
I'm going to let you do the last question, because you said that you wanted to ask Brian something while we had him here on air, so fire away.
Well, right, and this all gets to this whole area about contract spending at a strategic level. And again, we are pretty early in the administration, still technically in the first 100 days, so we don't know. But Brian, the question I had for you is that federal contract spending so far, I think, can be looked at in one of two ways, either as a wasteful enterprise or as something that is supporting critical infrastructure investments. It seems like you could argue either side of this from what we've seen so far, but I'm going to put you on the hot seat and ask you where you think this administration is going to come down on this issue and what signs we can point to along that line.
Well, so one obviously early signal that we talked about earlier was the focus of the president-elect on the cost of the Joint Strike Fighter program and Air Force One, right? And I think you could make a pretty good argument that his involvement probably didn't have a really significant effect on the actual costs of those programs, that the Air Force was already working pretty hard to try and get those costs down, and even has contracts in place where cost reduction is the main focus of the folks working on it. But I do think it sent a signal that this administration is interested in getting a few scalps. Right. I think the president would like to be seen as someone who has negotiated down for a better deal for goods and services across the government. And so I don't think the transition period was the last time we'll see the president take a personal interest in programs in the government. There's right now a controversy swirling around a company called TransDigm, where a member of Congress has said that it is charging monopolistic prices to the government, and has asked for an investigation into that. I think any allegations like that surface their way into the news are going to attract the attention of the White House. And so I think publicly, sort of what will make the most headlines in this administration is these kinds of scenarios where the White House makes a big deal out of a particular program and tries to show that it reduced the cost.
Fraud, waste, and abuse, and we're on the job trying to prevent that and make it better. In the meantime, though, there will be infrastructure investments that the administration supports, like wall, like military upgrades, things of that nature. So I guess if you're in those areas, at least initially, you might get the benefit of the doubt, but not long term.
To the extent the wall gets built, right, I think the president will likely say that it was great, but he will make sure that he's seen as trying to keep those costs down.
Okay, that's going to be it for today. Last word, gentlemen, thank you for joining me. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com. This is not my day job. If you need help on the marketing side of government, give me a shout at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you again for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.